Hi, this is Mark Waid, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 339 of Longbox Heroes. I'm Joe, joined by Todd. How are we doing tonight, Todd?
I'm doing great.
And it's night because we're recording at night, not when you're listening to this. Pretend it's nighttime when you're listening.
That's right. It's podcast magic.
Right. I still like that we pretend that this is this goes, you know, it's live to tape, so it's about as live as it gets.
It's live as you're listening to you.
That's right.
You're to it.
There's very little turnaround. Like, from the time that we record to the time that you hear it, it's maybe about a 2 to 3 hour difference.
That's right. And in those 2 to 3 hours, Todd's sleeping.
Right. Todd is sleeping and I am not.
I find that sad, but really doesn't mess my slumber up too much.
Right. Somehow you survive.
Mm-hmm. Somehow I immediately go right into snooze fest. It's my mutant power.
That you can take a nap anywhere.
That's right. As I always say, I don't take naps. I take awakes.
Oh, if only I was that lucky.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll talk about a little bit more of the adventures of me being home alone with Asa for an extended period of time. But the one thing that was constant when I was off work and even on the weekends, 6 o'clock in the morning, he comes right in. Time to get up, Dad. Let's go.
Oh, to have that energy again, boy. Oh.
Well, see, and that's the thing. During the week, when it's school time, he does not want to get up. But for this, it'd be like 6 o'clock, and he can't tell time just yet. And because of we're still dealing with the clocks being turned ahead recently, mm-hmm. 6 o'clock is still very dark. But about 6:45 is when the light starts peeking through, mm-hmm. and that's when the energy kicks him in.
Oh, he's like Superman. He's solar powered.
Yeah, like he'll roll in and wake me up at 6, but he'll just kind of lay in bed with me, or he'll make me go lay in his bed with him. But then mm-hmm. as soon as the sun starts peeking through, it's like he's awake and ready for the day.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
I don't like sunlight.
Nope, not at all. I'm starting not to be a fan of it either. So we have comic book stuff to talk about. We've got a full plate of stuff to discuss this week. We've got a ton of stuff in the news, whether it be the first of the DC bi-weekly books to no longer be bi-weekly. Information on Marvel's upcoming Generations event that is maybe possibly going to span the summer. We'll see. A longtime Bendis book, again, optioned and made into a movie, and some discussion there. And speaking of movies, two new trailers were released this weekend, one for the Justice League and another trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming, which we'll discuss here on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we'll have information about the conventions this weekend, with one biggie happening, of course. Digital sales and freebies and all new stuff there. What we read this past week, which includes Darth Maul number 2 and Unworthy Thor number 5, as well as a preview review book of a book that doesn't come out this week, but a book that actually comes out next week from Image. And we'll get to that when we get to that a little bit later on in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Also, what we're most looking forward to coming out this week are Todd and Joe Have Issues, as we discuss the issue of Action Comics number 775, the introduction of the Elite into the DC Universe, as well as discussions of The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, and Walking Dead.
That's a lot of show.
It is a lot of show. Luckily, we didn't have anything to do for an hour and a half beforehand.
That is true. Right. It was all laid-back time.
Right. So, this has been discussed for some time. We are approaching, within the next, I'd say, 2 months, the one-year anniversary of DC Rebirth. And about half the titles were still shipping twice a month. And it was just announced over the weekend that Deathstroke will be the first of those twice-monthly books to just go to monthly come this summer.
Hmm. That's an interesting choice to be the first one.
Right. And again, it's interesting as to why all they just said was it's going to be a bold new direction on the book, whatever that means.
Once a month, I guess, is a bold new direction.
Right, but if you remember several months ago, there was discussion that they were going to start alternating books that were currently shipping twice a month were going to go to once a month. Ones that were once a month were going to go to twice a month. And that was the way they were going to kind of launch some other new books, by taking a book that was twice a month and splitting it up into two separate books. And none of that stuff ever happened, but now here it is, finally it's happening. You know, it's going to be a year into the DC Rebirth run that they finally are making that change. Which leads me to believe that this is being possibly done for a storyline reason, as the sales on those books must still be doing okay if they're not changing the course.
Right, or they are still doing good, but Deathstroke isn't like one of the amazing books like Batman or Detective, and they're like, okay, we're going to drop it down to once a month and maybe give another character an ongoing once a month book to try and see how that works too, to try to, you know, diversify the line for more characters. I think that's my mind, the way that it's going. Like, I'm just going to say, like, we'll get a Creeper, you know, ongoing. I'm not saying that's the character, but just something different other than more Batman books, more, you know, whatever. I'm hoping, because I'd like to see some different characters pop up.
Right, and there hasn't been, I think Batwoman and Super Sons were the two most recent new books added.
Right. Maybe that has something to do. Maybe they count towards it.
Mm-hmm. Possibly. But who knows? It'll be very interesting to see.
But as you're saying, we're a year into Rebirth. My mind just clicked. I'm like, what season of Flash will they start calling stuff Rebirth? Like the way they did Flashpoint just recently? 2 years?
I was actually just going to... You took the words right out of my mouth. 2 years is exactly what I was going to say.
Because they're already writing for next season, like getting ideas for next season. And because they've already announced like certain things, and be like, all right, well, the year after that, it'll be all like, it's Wally's Rebirth, yay, like kind of stuff.
Right. Oh, I don't know.
Got to tie that stuff in 2 years later.
I'm just going to be interested to see how, well, I would assume that once the movie comes out, and we'll get into that a little bit more when we talk about the Justice League trailer, of course, but how the TV show is going to handle the heavy movie stuff.
It's not.
I think they're just going to ignore it.
They are. They're two separate entities, and that's the way they should be. But it's just my opinion.
It'll be interesting to see what they do.
Mm-hmm.
So, moving on, the Marvel event that was teased a while back, Generations, of them actually acknowledging that they may have some legacy characters. It appears to be a series of 10 one-shots that are in continuity, and it's going to be teaming up the two different versions that exist of such characters as Iron Man, Spider-Man, Miss Marvel, Thor, Hawkeye, Hulk, Jean Grey, Wolverine, Captain Marvel, and Captain America. With the usual cast of characters, like, you know, Bendis is writing Iron Man stuff, so he's going to do the Iron Man one. Bendis is writing Miles Morales Spider-Man, so that's the one he's going to do. Jason Aaron is doing Thor, so that's the one he'll do. Greg Pak is doing Totally Awesome Hulk, so that's the one he's going to do, and so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see exactly what spins out of this, and I don't know. It's the same creative teams, you know, so it doesn't seem like it's a cheap cash in. You know, I will get the Thor, you know, book where it's Jane Foster and Odinson teaming up to do stuff written by Jason Aaron, and that just goes right in with the existing run of Jason Aaron Thor books that I have, you know?
Right. I'm the same way.
It's not like it'll stick out like a sore thumb.
The only one that interests me a lot, like I get Totally Awesome Hulk, I get Thor, I get Iron Man. The only other one is Captain Marvel that interests me, because I've always been a big Captain Marvel fan and a big Gina's Vell fan. So anytime one of them pops up in a book, I kind of, unless they're a dirty Skrull, then I don't want to read it. But otherwise, I'll read a Captain Marvel book. So I'm going to give that one a try, even though I don't read any of the Captain Marvel now.
Right, and the writer on that is Margaret Stoll, who I don't know what her comic stuff is.
Maybe she's writing the actual Captain Marvel comic? I don't know, because I don't read Captain Marvel.
She actually did, as far as I could see here, the Black Widow, you know, any the comic stuff that she did. There were Black Widow novels, and she did those.
I vaguely remember those.
Right. They're more recent releases, like released last year, 2 years ago and last year.
Right, because they're starting to do more and more like Marvel novels for stuff with the movies out, I guess.
Right. So this will be her first like comic work.
Cool.
Interesting. So also interesting, speaking of Bendis and things of that nature, his graphic novel, comic book, released several years ago, upwards to almost 15 years ago, Torso, with Mark and Draco, about the Elliot Ness goes after the first serial killer ever in the United States, is being yet again optioned into a movie by Paul Greengrass, who did the most recent Jason Bourne movie. And I bring this up only because the original optioning of this was the basis of Bendis's comic, graphic novel, whatever, around that same time called Fortune and Glory, which is kind of written and drawn by him and his adventures of his properties getting optioned by Hollywood, HBO, etc., and just kind of how all of those things kind of went. And that is probably, to date, one of my top five favorite things Bendis has done, that Fortune and Glory.
That is one of the first things that I read that I actually enjoyed, which, not enjoyed, but like one of his first things that I ever read, and I really enjoyed it. I thought it was hysterical. And it kind of was weird because then I had to read like his superhero stuff.
Right.
Which is like completely different because this is obviously an autobiography, but funny and just, it was great. But I didn't read anything else, and I've never read his Jinx or Torso, which someone gave me like a few months ago. They're like, oh, I have two copies of it. I'm getting rid of stuff. I know you always said you wanted to read them. They dropped them off. I think I have to get around to trying them, but. Just Bendis stuff, I really don't have a lot of stuff other than Alias or some of the newer stuff.
Right, you said somebody gave you Jinx and Torso?
Yeah, separately, obviously.
Right, I would definitely check out Torso first just because we're talking about it here. Jinx is kind of, you'll see a lot of parallels between Alias and that. Not so much the current Jessica Jones book, obviously, because it's a little bit more heavy on superhero stuff, but there are definitely parallels there. But just one of the things to kind of give you how long ago this has been. When Torso originally came out and originally was optioned to be made into something by Hollywood, around the time it was going through, as they call it, developmental hell in Hollywood, the film I Know What You Did Last Summer hit big.
Oh, boy.
So that Monday, whoever the person at the studio who had the option for Torso called him up and wanted to cast a Ryan Felipe type as Elliot Ness in the movie. Because of the success of I Know What You Did Last Summer, which I think came out in like 1998.
I don't know off the top of my head. Are you saying Hollywood has knee-jerk reactions to what's hot in at the time?
Yes.
That doesn't Absolutely. Make any sense. Does not make sense.
1997 is when that came out. So we're almost at 20 years ago that Torso came out.
Well, he got paid for it. So.
Right. And again, it's being optioned again here, going through the whole thing. And the one thing that I'll never forgive Bendis for, when Fortune and Glory came out, he promised that we would get Fortune and Glory 2. And I'm sure a lot of the stuff with him being, as high up on the totem pole at Marvel that he is these days, there's a lot of stuff that he probably doesn't want to blab in a black and white poorly drawn comic book.
What?
But I think there's probably some stories that he could still tell maybe before Marvel. I think there's money to be made in a Fortune and Glory too.
My favorite thing from the first Fortune and Glory is when he gets the check. Do you remember the scene? And his wife is looking over his shoulder.
Yes.
That to this day, that's my Fortune and Glory moment. I'm like, that's fantastic. I'm trying to delicately walk around it.
Uh-huh. Yeah, so definitely, you know, check out Torso, yes, but definitely, as mentioned, check out Fortune and Glory, you know, for a kind of different side of Bendis, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Whatever his public persona may be these days.
Mm-hmm. And his character of himself is fantastic, the way he draws himself.
Yes. Very flattering.
Oh, yes, totally flattering.
Oh. So last but not least, again, speaking of movies here as well, we had two trailers drop recently since we last recorded. One was the first trailer for Justice League, the other being the second trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming. We'll kind of work this backwards here. I did not watch the second trailer for Spider-Man Homecoming. I've seen people, you know, put up GIFs and images and stuff from it, but I'm not going to watch that trailer.
The whole thing, you're already in, so...
I'm already in. What am I going to see in this trailer that's going to sell me otherwise, or is going to ruin some part of Spider-Man when I go see it in the movie, because I just saw it on a little tiny screen 3 months earlier, out of context?
Which is funny, because you've never... How many of the Spider-Man movies have you seen in the theater? This was...
I saw the three Raimi ones.
Oh, none of the...
I did not see the two Andrew Garfield ones, because I saw the first trailers for them, and I'm like, oh, these look terrible. I like Spider-Man. I don't want to go see a bad Spider-Man movie.
You made the correct select, son.
Yes. Oh, I'm not living that one down.
Mm.
You know, I still say that as bad as Spider-Man 3 is, and it's not good, there's more better stuff in the entirety of Spider-Man 3 than there was in both the trailers for the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man movies.
Just the Jazz Club alone is better than those two movies combined.
Right, and I don't know if you're being facetious there, but that scene is not as bad as everyone says that it is.
You know what, looking back... I just wish that scene is shoehorned in there, but I wish at that point, if that's what was going to be in that movie, I wish the whole movie was like that. Do you know what I mean?
I do.
It would have been better, because it's the rest of that movie is a train wreck. But whenever I watch, there's nothing better than watching Peter Parker snapping his finger going, dig on that, while he's thrusting to the camera. I mean, come on. That's fantastic.
I think if something similar to that was done in a movie today, I think people would enjoy it more because of like, oh, look how funny it is. Ha ha ha. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
So then we have the Justice League trailer, Todd. Did you watch the Justice League trailer?
Yes, I did. I didn't watch the Spider-Man either, so just so you know.
So what were your feelings on the Justice League trailer?
I really liked the Justice League trailer. First of all, it had White Stripes music, so I'm a White Stripes mark, so I'm all about that. But I watched it. I thought it was interesting. Batman or Bruce Wayne even made a joke in a. Well, I know your thoughts on Batman making jokes. So, but as I'm watching it, Flash's effects looked amazing. Like the running and stuff. There's a scene where he's running and it looks really good. And then my takeaway on it is Aquaman is going to steal this movie. But you wrote this on Twitter the other day, and Matt, an employee at our local comic shop, actually said, while I was talking with him and another friend, he's like, I want to see this movie. He's like, but fool me four times, shame on me, because I think that's what we're getting. Sold the bill of goods, because I didn't like anything that I've seen before this, so why would I like this, even though the trailer looks good? So we'll see. I don't know.
Yeah, this trailer sends up many red flags for me.
Okay.
In that it looks good, there's a lot of action going on in the movie, and I know a lot of people get hung up on the Flash's costume, and I don't care about the Flash's costume at this point. You know what I mean? Of all the things that I'm going to be upset about in this, the Flash's costume is like ninth on the list, right?
We'll get back to that, because it is one of my problems with the movie.
Right.
Go ahead.
I don't like the way Cyborg looks. he looks like too CG, if that makes any sense.
I know you and your bad CGI, but I do give movies a pass.
But it's not that it's bad CGI. It's not bad CGI. It's just too much CGI.
I give it a pass for right now because it's 3 months out. Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like, yeah. I've seen, like, I remember when I went to see the first King Kong movie. It might have been the first King Kong, not the first.
The
like,
one in
the
1933, 30, yes.
Right. No, the Peter Jackson one. And people were blasting it for the effects and everything. And take away what you want for most of that movie. The effects were not bad, but they were in the trailer because they weren't finished yet. So I'm like, all right, on that, I'll give it a pass for right now.
The effects were pretty bad in the finished product as well.
In
King Kong.
No, it wasn't. But anyway, we're not arguing.
There are scenes where people are passing through background objects.
That's the Brontosaurus scene, which I will give you is the bad scene in that movie.
No excuses. So, you know, Wonder Woman's there, Batman's there, and the part that troubles me the most is Batman and Aquaman making jokes. Or, you know, and again, I'm going to say this, and I don't mean this, but this is the best way that I can say it. Aquaman being silly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the part where he's, like, riding on top of the Batmobile as they're doing whatever. You know, we've previously seen, you know, I think in that teaser trailer that we saw at San Diego, there was a little bit of that. I don't think the people who make DC movies know how to inject humor into their dour, horrible films.
That's a good way of putting it.
And it ends up more feeling out of place and jarring than any, you know, gruesome act of violence, any swearing, any bad special effects. A mistimed, out-of-place joke can do as much damage as any of those other things. And that's what I fear is going to happen with this movie, is that everyone's going to be like, oh, you want jokes in this movie? You want it to be more lighthearted? Well, after Wonder Woman decapitates a bunch of parademons, she's going to look at the camera and say, don't diss my homies, you know? Come on.
You know what? I totally agree with you on that, because what I feel is happening is the you know, Batman v. Superman, Dawn of Justice didn't make a bajillion and a half dollars. So the movie companies, Warner Brothers, is like, why didn't this make enough money? Well, we're not like the Marvel movies. So they're telling Zack Snyder to force humor into the film, and he's going to, and it helps nobody, because it does not work for the people like us who didn't like the movie because they're dire and just bleak, and then the people who are going to see the movies who love the Batman Superman movie, who loved it for what it was, they're ruining it for them because they're stupiding it up for them, if I'm making any sense.
Like, they're trying to please all masters and will end up pleasing no one.
That's what I think is going to happen.
Right, and you know, at its core, you know, the Man of Steel trailer was good. At its core, the Batman vs. Superman trailer was good. At its core, the Suicide Squad trailer was good.
Mm-hmm.
Those weren't good movies. And
the
track record just feels the same of, like, they're going to get us all hyped up for this movie, and then it's going to be, you know, not what it's cracked up to be. But obviously we have Wonder Woman that comes out before then. And it's tough. Because the two Superman movies, you know, you kind of get like a somber and a more serious vibe from those trailers. The Suicide Squad trailer was, you know, it was very much them trying to ape Guardians of the Galaxy's feel.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas, whether it's intentional or not, Wonder Woman feels, the trailer at least, feels the most like Cap the First Avenger.
Okay.
And I know a lot of it has to do with it being both set in World War II, and I think that's why I'm drawing that parallel. Maybe I'm putting that on there myself. But I like Cap the First Avenger. I would think that that is probably at the bottom third of most people's list of the Marvel cinematic films.
Okay, really quick. Wonder Woman is going to take place in World War One.
World War One. Okay, you get what I'm saying.
I just didn't know if you knew that, so I'm throwing that out there. And Cap the First Avengers first Avenger is really high up on my list of the Marvel movies. I think as a whole, the Captain America trilogy is the best of the best Marvel franchise within the Marvel movies, if you know what I'm saying.
Like, right. If you're talking Thor, you're talking Avengers itself, you're talking Iron Man. Yeah, yeah.
Right. Like, the sum of the whole is better for all three movies of the Cap movies than the two Avengers movies, the two Thor movies, you get what I'm saying. I just love, they're different feels, but, you know, they're for what they are. Like, the World War II one, to me, should have a different feel. So yeah, I really like them, but I'm worried because once again, with the Wonder Woman, it just seems like it's like, all right, here she is. She's the Amazon warrior. She's doing this. And then we throw a joke in, you know, where she gets stuck in the revolving door because of her sword. And you're like, yeah, but it just, to me, it doesn't play because I know what the feel of these DC movies have been.
Right.
I want Wonder Woman and Justice League to be good, and they'll probably be okay to me in the end because for the DC movies, I set the bar so low.
Maybe this is their way to just lower expectations so badly that when they finally have a movie that's decent to good, everyone's just going to go out of their mind because they were expecting hot garbage.
Right. And on Flash's costume, I don't have a problem with how it looks, but I'm always against Flash in armor of any kind.
Right.
Because people, like, I've been online and I've talked with a few people, this and that, and they're like, well, Flash is fighting Darkseid and Parademons. Spandex and, you know, pleather doesn't cut it. You need armor. And he wore armor in Injustice Gods Among Us. And I'm like, yeah, but to me, you have your tank characters. You don't put heavy armor plating on your Lamborghini. You know what I mean? That's the whole point, is like speed and agility and dexterity. And I understand I'm not one of those, like, I can't just suspend belief. But to me, it's just like, it doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. I just hated it. It just seems it's got to gritty up the character, if you know what I mean, by putting him in armor. Yeah. I don't know, but that's just my take on it.
Yeah, but you know, everyone's got like armor-ish stuff.
I hated all the way back to those Total Justice figures. That's the first place I ever saw it. I was like, ugh.
Yeah.
Flash in armor. This isn't gonna end well.
So, again, trepidation with Justice League, not so much with Spider-Man. But, you know, this is, you know, you have to remember, this is the first one that is the Sony property being handled by Marvel Studios. So this could be a little bit different, even though, you know, it's ensconced in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Sony still has their grubby mitts on this.
Right.
So, again, trepidation is the word of the day.
If you say so.
Yes. My phone number's in the back of my license plate. Elizabeth to the ring.
Okay. I don't know.
So, conventions this weekend. There's a bunch of small conventions, but not to be overlooked conventions. There is the Central PA Comic Con in York, PA. A little bit more of a media guest heavy one, and, you know, depending on how your media guest wants and needs are. Kel Mitchell, the other half of the Kenan and Kel comedy team, will be there. Denise Crosby will be there.
Ooh, Tasha Yar.
Mm-hmm. Wasn't she only on one season of Next Generation?
Yes, she made reoccurring appearances after that as her own Romulan daughter.
Oh, okay.
Wibbly wobbly timey-wimey.
Gotcha. And David Yost, who was Billy, the Blue Ranger on the first Power Rangers series.
He wasn't the one who murdered anybody.
No, he was not the one who murdered anyone, sadly.
Right.
Also in Barre, Vermont, there is the Green Mountain Comic Expo. That's just, you know, kind of straight up comic book convention. But I'm glad to see Vermont getting more into the comic book convention game.
That sounds like a territory to me.
I know a guy who's trying to run for Memphis, where he's trying to run Memphis angles in the Vermont territory, and I don't think it's going to work out for him.
Oh my goodness. You just mash words together and you make money. That's the way I look at it.
Yes. Then there's the Gem City Comic Con in Dayton, Ohio. That's your more comic booky one. Barry Kitson's going to be there. Kyle Starks is going to be there. We'll talk more about him a little bit later on, but the biggie this weekend is WonderCon out in Anaheim, California. You know, this is your big comic book one. Everyone from Jim Lee to Mark Waid to Kevin Eastman and all points in between are going to be at this one, and rightfully so. I'm sure we might even get some announcements of stuff out of this one.
This kicks off the season, I think.
Well, didn't Emerald City a couple weeks ago officially kick off the season?
Oh, maybe it did. Did Emerald City already have? I forget. They're like a blur to me anyway.
Yeah. This is under the same umbrella as San Diego. So this is like little San Diego.
San Diego adjacent.
Right, San Diego adjacent. So digital sales and freebies. There's actually a ton of sales. Oh my goodness. So there is a bunch of Deadpool collections that are on sale. Along with scattered single issues and so forth. And I cannot stress this enough to you, the listener of this show. Deadpool Classics, Volumes 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5, is the possible greatest run on Deadpool ever. And each of those giant collections are $9 each. I highly recommend checking those out. And then a bunch of other random appearances, like I said. Those will all be in the links. Newer stuff, older stuff, tons of Deadpool stuff. I don't know why Deadpool is getting such a push right now. Dynamite is having a sale on the Women of Dynamite. Included in that is, you know, Vampirella, Xena, Mercy Thompson, but most importantly, a long-remembered favorite of the show here, and that was Gail Simone's run on Red Sonja. That is complete and full there. I think it ends up being 18 issues altogether. 99 cents a clip. Bob's your uncle. I highly recommend checking that one out. Still to this day, one of my favorite runs on a book in recent memory.
Definitely a really good read.
And then there's a catch-all Women's History Month where a bunch of Marvel first trades are super, super cheap. The first trades of things like Miss Marvel, Patsy Walker, Hellcat, Captain Marvel are $3 each. The first trade of Squirrel Girl is $2. The DC trades of your things like Gotham Academy and Batgirl, a little bit more expensive, of course. But there's all sorts of, you know, Women's History Month stuff included there. But the biggie sale, of course, I always do my best to try to point this out to everyone whenever it pops up. But DC Rebirth stuff is on sale. And, you know, these things are not going to be at these prices for very long. The first 4 to 5 issues. And you have to remember, most of these books had, like, there was Batman Rebirth number one, and then there was a Batman number one. A Nightwing Rebirth number one, and then a Nightwing number one, right?
Mm-hmm. Which was so confusing back then, but.
Right. So the first 4 to 5 issues of those are 99 cents each. So if you were waiting on some of that stuff or were wondering what to get into, like I said, the first 4 to 5 issues of things like Batman, like Detective Comics, like Nightwing, like The Flash, like a book that we talk about quite a bit here on the show, the Hal Jordan and the Green Lantern Corps. These are all books. The first several issues of them are on sale for 99 cents each. Worth it. Worth it, worth it, worth it. Definitely check them out.
Yes.
That is the red letter sale of the weekend, I would say. That's the one that's most important to check out. And if you don't want to buy books, Marvel did put up a couple new freebies here. It's mostly repeat stuff. Daredevil Dark Days number one, which is an 8-issue miniseries from the early to mid 2000s that I'm not familiar with. Hulk number one, and this is the, you know, book that was headlined by the Red Hulk from the mid-2000s, some book called I Am an Avenger number one that I have no idea what it is, and the Dark Horse iteration of Darth Maul number one is part of the freebie collection.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, got stuff for cheap, you got stuff for sale, and if you want more stuff free, you can head over to soontobenamednetwork.com, where you can get this podcast and all the other podcasts in the Soon To Be Named Network, and all of them are absolutely free. We are the only grouping of podcasts on the internet that do not charge you for the podcasts.
That's just from the goodness of our heart.
Right. We could rake you guys over the coals and charge you an arm and a leg, make you sign up for premium services, all this sort of stuff. No, no. Everyone in the Soon To Be Named Network is happy to give you these shows out of the goodness of their heart, whether it be us here, Longbox Heroes, Longbox Heroes After Dark, Prodigal Sons Podcast, Prime Defective, which, you know, I think are on track to have another episode in the next month or so, Fresher in Parlance, who are on hiatus, Profane Argument, Puzzle Warriors 3, Paladins of Voltron, Talkin' Gimmicks will also be back from hiatus as Joey's ear is here healing nicely, the AIM Downsides Podcast, and Podvocacy, which I was a guest on this past week.
You get around our network.
I certainly do. We dig. They do a thing every now and then because they watch different movies or TV shows than we do, and a bunch of their stuff is on hiatus now, strangely, in like March. I don't know how things work over at Fox. But they do things on this website called Flick Chart, where they have a show Flick Chart where it pops up two movies, and you choose which one you like better. And it puts it on a list. And then as you do that more and more, it starts pairing up these movies on this list. And then you could say, no, that movie should be a little bit higher. And it'll start pairing it up against other movies on your list. And you have to choose between, like, X and Y.
Oh,
and
wow.
And it's very interesting. The one big debate that we got into, and a lot of times you end up with movies that are completely different, but obviously, you have to make a decision. Which one is moving up and which one is moving down on the list? The big one that we ended up having the most discussion on was the original Jurassic Park and No Country for Old Men.
Jurassic Park.
And see, there's your knee-jerk reaction. What was our discussion and reaction? You got to tune in to find out. And at the end of the show, David and I kind of go a little deep in regards to wrestling talk, specifically what WWE is doing, what the indies are doing, and, you know, what the indies could be doing to kind of separate themselves from the rest of the pack. It was good to get talking that deep on wrestling, which I don't get a chance to do on this show.
Black, who wants to talk about wrestling?
Well, there's going to be wrestling talk on this week's Longbox Heroes After Dark, as both Todd and I partake in Gallifrey Birds Roman numeral 3, as I discuss the Doctor Who opus. Was it something?
Terror
of the Autons.
Mm-hmm.
And Todd discusses the World Championship Wrestling pay-per-view from 1992 of Wrestle War.
Mm-hmm.
But all of that out of the way, let's get into comics. Todd, you kick things off with whatever one you want to start with.
I'm going to start with Unworthy Thor, number 5, by Jason Aaron and Oliver Coppell and Kim Giaconito and Pascal Alexi. I'm not really sure because they just have artists written down, so I'm not sure how all that works. But basically, this is the story of Odin's son trying to get the ultimate Thor's hammer, which was, you know, left after the Secret Wars Thor's tie-in. And while all this is going on, Thanos is sending his minions after it. And on top of that, we get to finally find out what Nick Fury had said to Thor all those, I want to say, years ago for what made him unworthy. I really enjoyed this issue. It's cool to see Odin's son, you know, on the track to getting back to doing stuff. But we find out what Nick Fury said. I don't know how spoilery you want to get into, Joe.
I say we get
this.
Into it. The book's been out for a week, and yeah, let's get into it.
Basically, he tells Thor that what was the Gore from the first run?
Gore, the God Butcher.
The God Butcher. He basically said he was right in saying that no gods, you know, all gods are bad. And he's basically, Thor agrees with them that no, none of the gods are worthy. Because even at one point, Beta Ray Bill asks him, he's like, through a series of events, Thor doesn't pick up the hammer. And he goes, would you have been able to pick it up? And he's like, no God's worthy to pick. You know, none of us are. And I find this interesting because now I want to see where this goes with Odin's son and what his plans are going to be from this. Obviously, I'm a big Jason Aaron fan. I love his take on Odin's son. And now somebody is coming for the ultimate hammer. We're not 100% sure who they are because we never see them, but they are called the War Thor, mm-hmm. which is very interesting, which I think Jason Aaron is just stealing the War Doctor stuff from Doctor Who. But I'll let it slide on all this.
So I'll say this. The statement in and of itself that Gore was right is not as... It's a little anticlimactic in and of itself. Mm-hmm. However, it's what Odinson takes from it. Not so much that it made him unworthy, but the little speech that he gives afterward that kind of really adds the gravitas to not only that, but kind of everything that's been going on in the Thor books for, you know, the last year plus.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the fact that this does happen every now and then with a Thor book, but typically what happens is once a new writer comes on, these sort of things kind of like, you know, the deck chairs will get reshuffled by a writer, and then a new writer comes in to kind of put everything back into its place. Whereas one of the benefits of Jason Aaron being on this book for as long as he has been, he can keep those deck chairs kind of mixed up a little while and lead you on a new path through them. And what I'm getting at with that is there are many Thor stories out there where the crux of it is Thor is braggadocious, Thor has a big head, he thinks he's the best, something happens, he sees the error of his ways, the end.
Mm-hmm.
This is Thor is braggadocious, Thor thinks he is the best, Thor is told something that makes him no longer worthy, he sees the error of his ways, to be continued.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't wrap up in a nice little bow. There's still more story to tell.
Right. And two really interesting things pop out from me also that we haven't touched on yet. One is that he's made an enemy, a powerful enemy in the Collector.
Right.
Which I think will, you know, obviously pop up later. And another thing that I think is we're seeing Thanos and Hela get together.
Mm.
Because Hela is the version of death in the Norse and slash, you know, Asgardians, stuff like that, which I think is going to play into the Marvel Cinema Universe, where they're not going to use death, like the robe and skeleton that he's in love with.
Yes.
But I think he's going to fall in love with Hera in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
That's an interesting theory, and I think if you read the letters pages on this...
Mm-hmm.
They do an explanation as to where this story lines up with what's going on in the Thanos book currently.
I did not read the letters.
Right, because Thanos is obviously in a very different place physically in his own series than where he is here.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that, but I like that idea of them using Hela as the death stand-in in the cinematic universe. And this is a good way to kind of start establishing that before the movies start coming out in November.
Synergy.
It's almost as though in this end of things, Marvel kind of knows what they're doing.
What? I don't know.
Thor even has a short haircut on the cover of this book.
But is it brown? Like no, in the trailers?
No.
That's what you need. Brown hair.
I think it's blonde in the movie. It's just blood splattered, maybe.
That could be true. I didn't realize.
Dirt smudged in his hair.
Dirt and cookies he's got in his hair.
So, Unworthy Thor was good. I'll be happy to see Odinson pop up again in the main Thor book again. Probably after all this Shi'ar stuff is done.
Right.
And just as a side note, getting caught up on my back issues, I really like that story arc as well.
Yes. The whole God trials and tribulations.
Yes.
Like the battle or whatever you want to call it. Where one God's going to get served is what I call it.
Right. So the other book that we both read from this past week was Darth Maul number 2, written by Cullen Bunn with art by Luke Ross. This is continuing Darth Maul on his journey to find the Jedi that's in captivity, but also trying to do so under the radar, because if he gets found out by, and again, Darth Sidious, the Emperor, you know, he's going to be in a lot of trouble. This isn't going to be as big as a deal as that time when Anakin used the Force to make a piece of fruit float, and Obi-Wan would be grumpy over it, but it's a similar thing, but on the dark side of it.
And you know what? We have a cowboy alien, so I'm happy about that. And we also have we're getting a sassy robot, which is the heart and soul of all Star Wars books. So I'm good with that.
Right. If the new trope in every Star Wars story, whether it be a comic book, whether it be a novel, whether it be any of the new movies, there's a new sassy robot that they introduce, which leads them to some sort of sassy robot crossover. At some, like, some sort of sassy robot team-up book later, you know, in 2020 or whatever. All for it.
I'm wondering if in this next previews that comes out today, there's a droids book. I think it's maybe a sassy robot team-up.
No, it's a collection. They're collecting the old droids book from the 80s.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
Do you remember? And I'm hoping for an Ewoks TV show DVD is what I want. The TV movies.
Well, there was, what, two of them?
I think so. They might have made one. I don't know.
I know there was one with Wilford Brimley in it.
Was there really?
Yes. Like, one that everyone knows with, like, that little blonde-haired girl.
Mm-hmm.
Like, her dad or her whatever, like, her parental figure in that film was Wilford Brimley.
And he wasn't getting his diabetes test strips?
I don't think they had diabetes in a galaxy far, far away, so he was okay.
Oh, good. They used the medical droid to cure that.
Right. And I don't know if he was, like, playing a character or if he was just, you know, straight up Wilford Brimley was transported to the Star Wars universe.
Mm-hmm.
That part was unclear to me.
So after you get attacked by a Wampa, you get put in the Bacta tank for your scars and your diabetes.
Right. So the other characters that you bring up, and again, I apologize because their names escape me. I am not as steeped in the Star Wars lore as I should be. But those are all pre-existing characters that I think are from the Rebels or some other cartoon, or like the Clone Wars cartoon or something.
Yeah, I don't know. I think the only one I recognize is the green female character with red hair. I think she might have been the shape changer that was in the movies that you know, the that attack Anakin and
Zam Weasel or Wessel or whatever her name is.
Oh, no, this is Ara Sing.
Right, and she's actually, hang on, I have to look this up now.
And then the cowboy alien is Cad Bane, which is the greatest name I've ever heard. Then there's a little mosquito guy.
Yeah, those are all characters from the Rebels cartoon.
Which is where these books actually start to lose me, because I don't watch any of the Rebels or the prequel stuff after the movies.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't have the connection to these characters, like when like Lobot shows up in a comic, I'm like, oh, well, he was only in 8 seconds of Empire Strikes Back, but I know Lobot and I could pick him out of a lineup.
Right. And this is kind of where it tests the tensile strength of my Star Wars knowledge, you know, when these sort of characters show up. But from what I understand, the Clone Wars cartoon was okay, which is where Cad Bane and the rest of them came from, and they do show up in Rebels. I do hear that Rebels is much better, but still, I don't have a lot of time in my day.
Either do I.
But I'm happy these characters are showing up for the people that like these characters. I like the fight scenes in this. You know, that Darth Maul kind of gets his own cantina scene, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And gets to whoop up on a bunch of people.
But he has to be careful. Right. So he doesn't get out as a Jedi.
Yeah, he uses a little bit of Jedi hocus pocus, but not a lot, because again, he doesn't want to get found out.
Which I thought was really cool. That was one of my favorite parts. Like, oh, can't use the saber, so we're just going to have to do this the old fashioned way.
So, still liking Darth Maul, the only thing from the prequels that I allow to exist in my consciousness.
And Watto. That's the only other. When he gets his mini, I'm all over it.
Well, it depends on who the writer on that Watto mini series is.
Oh, any.
Did we discuss on here The fact that I don't like that the Jedi mind trick don't work on Watto.
Watto is a strong-willed character.
No excuses.
Very, very strong-willed Watto.
So
you can't...
A chubby blue mosquito alien can outwit Qui-Gon Jinn?
Well, listen. He's very smart. He's lived a long time.
You want me to buy that and midichlorians?
Which one would you buy more?
I'll pick one.
Pick one. You have to do the whole flick pick or whatever it is.
One thing.
Flick pick. You got to, one's going up, one's going down.
Yeah.
Watto not getting the, not being able to be tricked by the Jedi mind trick is going up while midichlorians are going down for me.
I'm going with Watto.
Going up or down?
I'm going, Watto's going up, midichlorians going down.
See, this is why we have a show. We think alike.
Yep, yep. So the last book that we're going to be discussing is one of our preview review books. And this is an Image book that comes out next week. So this is to kind of get you primed and ready for it. It is a book called Rock Candy Mountain, written and drawn by Kyle Starks. Full disclosure, Kyle Starks, I would consider him a friend.
Oh, boy.
He's someone that I've met at several different Chikara events back when I was allowed to go to those sort of things.
Mm-hmm.
I am and have been a fan of his work for many, many years. I have a lot of his previous stuff in my collection, whether it be his most recent Kickstarter project, which was called Kill 'Em All, or the one prior to that, which was called Sex Castle. He is a very kind of action-oriented, fighty sort of guy. He's a big wrestling fan. A lot of mythology sort of stuff in there as well. The Sex Castle one I think you would enjoy greatly. It's essentially if you just took every 80s action movie and jammed them all together in one comic book, that's what that was.
Is there any castles?
No.
Okay.
The name of the lead character was named after Edge's first character that he did on the indies, which was Sexton Hardcastle.
Oh, boy. And right. McCormick?
Yes. So, Rock Candy Mountain, the description for this is a... It says, Kyle Starks would like to invite you to a magical world of hobos. The world's toughest hobo is searching through a post-World War II America for the mythological Rock Candy Mountain, and he's going to have to fight his way there. Lots of hobo fights. So many hobo fights. A new action comedy series full of high action, epic stakes, magic friendship, trains, punching, kicking, joking, a ton of hobo nonsense, and the literal devil. Yeah, the literal devil.
Mm-hmm.
So, I was coming to this book with preconceived notions because I'm a fan of Kyle's work. I was very excited. I was, when this was solicited, you know, he did, he did not tout this one from the mountaintops that, like, hey, I got some big news coming, blah, 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 blah. So when this showed up in the Image solicitations 2 months ago, I was gobsmacked. I was like, oh my God, a friend of mine has something that's going to be published by Image. This is super cool. So I was very excited for this. I was coming into this with preconceived notions that I was going to enjoy it, and I did. You know, as that little description mentions, there is a hobo named Jackson, who, you know, might have some mystery involved to him, and he picks up another hobo who is going back to the Midwest after attempting to try his luck at being an actor in California, and all the while Jackson is looking to go to Rock Candy Mountain, which no one believes is actually real except for him, because it's from, like, a folk song or something.
It's in the beginning of Oh Brother, Where Art Thou?
Okay.
They, when they're escaping the chain gang, that's the song that they're playing, which is the first place I ever heard it. So I knew exactly what they were talking about when they mentioned it in this book. I really enjoyed it too. I was a little put off by the beginning when the devil shows up and he starts, you know, just gobsmacking hobos.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, this is, I don't know what's going on here. But then when I met Jackson, Pomona, and the hobo mafia.
Yes.
I was like, I'm sold. And then I'm only going to spoil one line in the whole comic. And I don't know if you know what's coming. But there's a fight scene and someone yells out, oh, my God, he is punch diarrhea, and their faces are the toilet. Yeah. And I was like, give me all of this. Give me this more. I want to read this book so much. I had a blast reading this. Jackson and Pomona are fantastic. I'm hoping we get some hobo code in this.
Right, and see, I was going to bring that up, this, a lot of this, because obviously, you know, you draw your parallels with hobos, but there was that Delinquents miniseries, which was the last time that we saw Quantum and Woody appear in a Valiant book, which was focused around the hobo code.
Mm-hmm. And that was right...
There is that bit on the back cover where it's like the circle with a line through it that says good road to follow, which is part of the hobo code.
Mm-hmm. So more hobo code. So when hopefully if we ever get back to Baltimore, we can see our buddy that we met there. Remember him?
Yes, I do.
So I don't know. I just find this a fun book. I always, you know, found that like the hobo mythos interesting and all that stuff. So I'm gonna read more of this. I can't wait.
Yeah, buddy. So definitely when this one comes out next week, check it out. And, you know, as we mentioned last week, we're going to do a little bit more concerted of an effort to do preview books, preview or review preview. What is it? Preview review or review preview?
Oh, my God, you're killing me. It's a preview review.
We're going to try to do more preview review books as the year goes on to kind of give you a little bit more advance notices, stuff that's coming across our collective desks as a group.
Later on at the shop today, me and you are going to do a WNBC on the way to say preview. Right. Review.
I see. I don't do it like I, Mr. Captain Frank, do it. You know, it's when I hear it, it sounds like I'm saying it right.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that's what we read this week. What we're looking forward to coming out next week. What are we looking forward to coming out this week, Todd?
Oh,
that's where we go to the pull post. Every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, over at longboxheroes.com, we put up the pull post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week, whether you get your books print digitally, mailed to your house, trade, hardcovers, however it is you get your books, be forewarned, be forearmed, know what's coming out, and get ready for a small week, because this is the first five Wednesday month of 2017, so it's weird and slim pickings.
Mm-hmm.
Over at the pull post, Todd and I are doing two things. One, we're both attempting to guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. And two, we are keeping a running tally of how many books we are getting from each publisher. Just so we can kind of look at the end of the year and see, okay, that's where all our money is going. That's who gets, you know, we should just write them a check.
Mm-hmm.
So looking over your list, attempting to guess what you are most looking forward to coming out this week, I am going to guess it is Booster Gold Flintstones number one.
You are correct, sir.
Bango in the gas tank. Your ex-husband strikes again.
There's a lot of stuff you say I don't get. But anyway, I'm looking at your list. And is it Thanos number five?
It is not. It is Black Widow number 12. This is the last issue of the Mark Waid, Chris Samnee, Black Widow run, which
is really,
yes, has been kind of under the radar. It seems as though it's been coming out a little bit. It was a little sporadic there where it was like 2 months in between issues. You know, wrapping up after 12 issues. I really like what they've done with it. I love the Samnee and Waid team, and I'm, you know, interested to see how they wrap everything up with this book. So it's the one I'm most looking forward to coming out. So yay, I make a little bit of headway. Now I'm only behind by two correct guesses.
Two correct guesses, that's all you need.
To tie it up, and you need to get two wrong.
Well, I'll never get any more wrong. I'm gonna focus like Daniel-san for the rest of the year.
So we'll be talking about those books on next week's show, as well as having a special guest to talk about one of the other Hanna-Barbera DC crossovers, as Craig from Puzzle Warriors 3 is going to make a rare crossover appearance on one of the other shows to discuss the one that he's most looking forward to coming out this week, which is the Suicide Squad Banana Splits book.
Are we going to get a chromium cover on the big crossover episode?
I don't know. I hope we... I hope that gives us a little bit of the Puzzle Warriors 3 rub.
Oh, don't get me started on the Puzzle Wars Warriors.
And I'm going to say this. I'm going to use this opportunity because Craig is going to be on here alone. He's not going to have Ray or Ian or anyone else to back him up. It's 2 against 1. He's going to have to explain what this Cinnabon thing with you is.
It's where I work.
You know what I mean.
It's where I work, and he knows, and he wants the secret Cinnabon recipe, which I've stated before is cinnamon and raw dough. Or undercooked dough. I'm sorry.
Not raw. Come on, that's illegal. That's just serving people raw dough.
Raw.
So I'm looking forward to having Craig on the show to discuss that, and I'm sure who knows what else next week. While you're over at longboxheroes.com, be sure to check out all the other things that we have over there, whether it be past editions of the Pull Post, past editions of this show, past editions of After Dark, past iterations of Todd and Joe Have Issues. Everything is there, because once you put it on the internet, it's there forever.
Mm-hmm.
Something else that's there forever is our Amazon click-through link, which is at the top of the page. If you are going to purchase something through Amazon, Easter is around the corner. And you could buy Easter stuff through Amazon, I guess. I don't know. but anything that you purchase through Amazon, do so by clicking our link first. And then it doesn't charge you anything extra, but it gives us a little bit of a kickback on the back end. And anything that you purchase that gives us a little bit extra money, we greatly appreciate it. Some of the notable purchases from this past week was a Wally single LCD monitor desk mount stand, which I think the description is very confusing, but it looks like one of those arms that you could put your microphone in.
Ah, I know what you're talking about.
So that when you're doing this, it doesn't affect your microphone.
Ah, the thing you do.
Right, the things I do, allegedly, can work to prevent that from happening. Someone also purchased an Innotek high-accuracy digital bathroom scale. Don't know why you have to throw bathroom in there, but anyway.
That's where it goes.
I think you could put a scale in any room in your house.
Nope, only the bathroom.
It only works there.
That's right. It's got a GPS device. It knows.
Well, it's a candy dish, Ned. $90. See, that one you get.
That one I do understand.
All right. A World Wrestling Entertainment Defining Moments Shinsuke Nakamura action figure.
Oh.
And someone also purchased a go-away doormat.
I need one of those.
There's actually a funny exchange between former ECW wrestlers The Sandman and Raven. Where Raven had the go-away doormat, and Sandman went and stole it from him. And put it inside of his house.
Oh,
so Raven
my.
Couldn't get it, but he put it in a position where if Raven peeked through the window, he could see it in the house.
That's terrible.
That's fantastic. Those two lovable scamps. So, in addition to all of this, we also have Todd and Joe Have Issues, where we are going to discuss Action Comics number 775, a one-shot, giant-sized issue of Superman against the Elite.
Let me get my tissues.
Uh-oh.
I love this issue, man. This is a great pick by you.
Yeah, hey, listen. I only pick good books. I should purposely go through the collections and see if I can find a terrible single issue and make you read that.
You've already do that.
This would have been the perfect opportunity to do that for like an April Fool's prank.
Oh, you already make me do that when I watch wrestling.
Who are you kidding? You love it.
Oh, yes. But basically, this is the story of an elite. The elite is like an authority pastiche, and basically they do what they want. They take prisoners, kill people to get the job done, and it's Superman going up against them. It does, has Superman's time passed, the whole don't kill and save people. And, and it's a question that is time. It keeps popping up in comics since, the 80s and stuff like that. So this issue to me is fantastic in the way that it's done. The elite, you know, are jerks, but Superman never gives up the way he looks at things, or does he? Because there's a big moment where Superman, you know, just it looks like he has turned to their point of view.
Yes.
And it's fantastic because it's when I remember reading it the first time, obviously I know how it all ends. I got scared. I was like, please don't tell me that your Joe Kelly is doing this. But the way he plays it all out and Superman takes everybody down but makes it look like he's using the elite's tactics but not is fantastic. But the one part of this book that stands out to me the most is the night before the – and I'm getting goosebumps right now.
All right.
That before the big battle, when he's in bed talking with his – at this time, you know, Lois and Clark are married at this time in Superman's, you know, run. And he's discussing it with Lois is one of the most real and touching moments to me in comics. And I tweeted out earlier today, I think every once in a while with these books, I try to capture a quote that sums up what, you know, I feel the book is about. And he literally says, I heard a child tell his friend that he wanted to be in the elite because it would be fun to kill bad guys. Fun to kill. And I'm like, you don't need anything else in this book to sum up how Superman should be when it comes to like the new, you know, tougher, grittier superheroes. And that's a beautiful line to me.
Right. This is, again, like I said, a really good book. They play Superman very well, do the elite, mostly Manchester Black. You know, the other three characters, are, you know, they're there, but it's really Manchester Black versus Superman at the end of the day of what this is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we had kind of discussed a little bit last week that this is a book that at the time I think was very much praised and liked and so forth, but then over the last couple of years, a lot of people have kind of soured on it. And a lot of it is because everyone says, oh, everyone just does this story with Superman because it's such an easy story, blah, 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 you know, different tactic people come. And, you know, this is the one. Is Superman finally going to kill? Is Superman going to rethink the way that he does? And he never does. And then other people are like, it's just poor, you know, it's Superman would never do resolve things in the way that he resolves things at the end of this. Like, the real Superman would never do this, right?
Mm-hmm.
And obviously, Superman could technically do anything that you want him to do because he's Superman, right?
Right.
And obviously there's a much more extreme threat, so he does take a little bit more of an extreme measure, all things considered. But at the end of the day, I feel as though he is true to what Superman is at his core, which is a character who will do anything and everything to save the day with as minimal casualty as possible.
Right.
And still stay true to, you know, who he is and what he is. You know, and obviously the whole thing is being, and the other caveat to it is that the whole thing is being broadcast to the entire world, right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a part in here, as I'm pulling up the issue now as we're talking about it. So when him and Manchester Black have their whole big thing at the end of the book, Manchester Black says, if you think this is over, you're living in a dream world. And Superman says, I wouldn't have it any other way. Dreams save us, dreams lift us up, and transform us. And on my soul, I swear, until my dream of a world where dignity, honor, and justice become the reality we all share, I'll never stop fighting. Ever. And I'm just like, oh boy, I forgot how good this was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's stuff like that that really makes this book so good. Now, the one thing that I forgot about was that there's a couple pages that are not done by Doug Monkey, that they're done by Lee Brahimo.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that I forgot, like, you know, it's Joe Kelly and Doug Monkey on this book, and that's what I always remembered. And when I came upon the pages done by Lee Brahimo, they're really good, but they were jarring because I wasn't expecting them.
Right.
But other than that, it was a nice walk down memory lane to reread a comic that I think still is a very good, if not one of the best Superman stories in recent memory.
Right. I look at it as, you know, you were saying some people would say he'd never do that. Well, this book has only gotten better in time for me as I read this now, especially like with the Superman movie and the Batman v Superman. But the whole thing is that he would never do that is he's making a point in the way he does it. He's like, is this the hero you want? Well, I'm going to give you the hero you want. And he does it. And because it's televised, and then it's kind of like really is like, it's kind of like saying, is that what you really want me to be? All those people out there who like, it's better this way. Is you want me to be that? And he also sends a message to the elite. It's like, you don't care about how people are. You don't care how people feel for what you do. How about I make you feel that way? Like, I just love everything about the message, everything. This book will never get old to me. And I honestly, it would be a rare thing, like you say, people do this book occasionally, and they do, but I don't see in my time, but it can be done, anybody doing it better than this book right here. So I love Superman in Action Comics 775.
And again, like, so I'm glad we got a chance to revisit it here.
Mm-hmm.
So, Todd, what is our book for next week's Have Issues?
Next week is Marvel 2-in-1 Annual 7, The Thing versus the Champion. The way I look at it is every once in a while you have a book that comes along that you could hand someone and go, you know what? Everything you need to know about this character is in this book. This book is what I think of when I think of Benjamin Grimm, the ever-loving blue-eyed thing. Have you ever read
two?
No, annual Marvel 2-in-1 annual number 7.
Number 7. Okay.
Have you ever read it?
I think I'm somewhat familiar with it. It's not the wrestling one, right?
Champion challenges a person from Earth to fight him, and it's in a ring. But it's not wrestling, so I don't know if that's what you're remembering. Do you know what I mean?
Right. Okay, so I just pulled up the cover. I've never read this.
Okay.
But I'm going to look forward to reading it.
Yes.
So that covers the main bulk of the show. You know, Twitter, all that stuff, whatever. Let's get into TV talk, and it might be a little bit of a truncated TV talk, but we'll see.
Right.
So, if you don't care about The Flash, Legends of Tomorrow, Walking Dead, we bid you adieu. Thanks for listening, episode 339. If so, give us like 2 seconds and we'll get right into it. So, The Flash this week.
Right.
Entitled Duet. The Music Meister shows up, as does Supergirl, and there's a lot of singing and dancing.
Yeah.
The end.
You know what? You summed up exactly what my thoughts were. I'm not a musical guy, so I didn't care. It didn't move the plot along of Savitar. It mainly kind of brought Iris and Barry back together. That's really the only thing that it is. I thought they are good singers. The song, the ditties that they sang that are known were fun. I thought the original, you know, was cute in some of the jabs they take at superhero stuff. That's all I have to say about the episode.
But for me, at least in all honesty, I like the episode just fine. But to me, it felt like, hey, other shows of our ilk have done musical episodes. A lot of the people in our CW universe have musical backgrounds of various degrees, mm-hmm. You know, from Grant Gustin to everything else. And I think they put the call, they probably have a group Facebook chat that they're all in. And the producer, Greg Berlanti, said, hey, if we do a musical episode of The Flash, all you singing types, would you want to be in it? For scale? And then that's how this episode got made.
Are you using scale as a musical pun?
Well, no, I'm using scale as a pun of we're not going to pay you a lot of money to be in this.
Right, no, but get it? Because scales. But no, I don't know about that because I think they're contracted to do their episodes regardless. of like certain amount of money. You know what I mean? Like Captain Cold gets his episodes this year. They're starting to do that with the contract. So I don't know. I wouldn't say that they're doing it for scale, but that I look at it as like, who wants to sing? I'll be over. So, right. And just to see, the guy from the Wool Council not do Tally Me Banana, I was sad. I think anytime he sings, it should be Tally Me. That should be his song from now on.
Now, see, what they should do is, over on, like, Legend of Tomorrow or one of the other shows, as a rib, is get all the people who have no musical talent and say, hey, yeah, you guys are in a musical episode. Good luck. Just so we could see Dominic Purcelli or whatever, however you pronounce the guy who plays Heatwave, trying to, trying to sing like some sort of show tunes or something.
Oh, that's right. Take all of me.
Oh, boy. Of all the ones to choose. Anyway, episode was fine. Like Todd said, it was more to just kind of move the pieces back of getting Barry and Iris together.
Mm-hmm.
There was no mention of the chalkboard, the dry erase board, whatever.
Right.
So that's how you know it's a non-important episode, because they didn't mention that.
One quick thing, though. The Music Meister, did they ever call him the Music Meister?
No, they never actually call him the Music Meister in the show.
And I think he's like a monitor or something like that. Do you know what I mean? Because he shows up, he's like, I watch and I fix things. And I'm like, I think he's going to be a bigger character down the line. That's the only thing that popped out at me, is he's not the Music Meister. That's a whole, like, facade. Do you know what I mean? That he's going to be a big, he's going to be something, like, all-powerful. I don't know how to explain.
What if he's Mitzelpidelic?
From Super, he could be.
I don't think he's shown up in
He has.
Oh, he has in Supergirl?
Yes, he has. He was a few-ish episodes ago, someone told me.
Huh.
He wanted to be Supergirl's boyfriend. He was doing the whole pretending to be a hero like Superman. But he wasn't like the imp. He was a regular person. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I don't know, unless maybe that was a whole imaginary story, because I don't watch it. But Mix has been on the Super show, apparently.
Was he voiced by Gilbert Gottfried like he was in the cartoon?
No, the Warner Brothers, like, not Bugs Bunny knockoffs. That was fantastic.
I just want Gilbert to get more work, because I love Gilbert.
I was watching a Law and Order SVU the other day, and he was in it as a computer tech, and it was fantastic. It was like, did you try tracking down the IP address? Don't you think I thought of that? Like, it's beautiful. He's just so, like, sassy, sarcastic to them. And he's only in it for, like, 2 minutes. But I was like, all right, I'll stop. Gilbert's on Law & Order SVU.
Oh, Gilbert. So anyway, let's move on to Legends of Tomorrow, Fellowship of the Spear. So, a lot of Spear of Destiny stuff. And they're attempting to figure ways to get rid of the Spear of Destiny. And the way that they figure this out is that they have to get the blood of Christ, which is what bound the spear. So now they need to find that to break the spear apart. And they enlist the assistance of someone in World War II from France who wrote about it. And that would be J.R.R. Tolkien.
Or as they say, Tolkien.
Tolkien.
I was like, just say Tolkien. Stop it.
And then, of course, Mick again is going crazy and starting to see Captain Cold. Or is he? He is. Because the Legion went and pulled Captain Cold from a different point in time before he joined up with the Legion to be on part of their team. Which is a plan that I wish they had done sooner.
What? More Captain Cold is what you're saying?
More Captain Cold. But Todd, I may even end up watching Prison Break when that show comes up. Even though I've never watched Prison Break before, the fact that it's the two of them, I can just pretend in my heart of hearts that it's just more of Heatwave and Captain Cold together.
He's going to say something like, would you drink like more ice? And you'd be like, yeah! Captain Cold! Yeah, no. And on top of that, like, Vixen starting to, I don't know, turn weird because she wants to destroy the use the spear. Even they're telling her, like, don't even touch it. She's doing all that, and I don't know. It was a good episode. It was interesting, and I love when you see a time travel show where they're giving Tolkien all his ideas for Lord of the Rings. Like, you have to throw this, you have to destroy a magic artifact, and it's just funny. I always love that kind of stuff. But seeing Captain Cole back is kind of good, and then Mick is, you know, the self fulfilling prophecy where it's like, if you treat me like a criminal, I'm going to become a criminal. Cause he's like, that's the way you think of me. You think of me as the thug, like Cold was telling him, and they did. But I'm wondering if it's a clever ruse or if he's really joined up with his buddy Captain Cold.
I think he did this, personally, as to try to convince this Captain Cold to rejoin, the mm-hmm. team so that he can get his buddy back.
Right,
in his mind, he did it once. Cold kind of turned him to become a babyface. So in his mind, he thinks he could turn Cold to become a babyface.
But I think in the end, it's going to be they're going to be rogues again when it's all said and done.
Interesting. We shall see.
And what did you think of Mick in his hat, in his World War One hat, World War Two hat? Was it too small for you? Or
no, this was an acceptable Mick Rory hat situation.
As soon as I saw the hat, I'm like, I need to know what Joe thinks, but I don't want to tweet at him or text him because he not have seen it yet. Does this qualify as a tiny hat?
Like I said, it was an appropriate sized hat for his giant head.
Okay.
I'll allow this hat.
Okay. The first acceptable Heatwave hat.
Yes. But yeah, Legends of Tomorrow is good. You know, these shows are starting to get wrapped up here shortly, you know?
Yeah.
So there's not really much we could get into, like, this deep into the season on them. Unless there's something that really jumps out at us. And really right. wasn't much.
And speaking of a show that's about to wrap up,
mm-hmm.
we have the penultimate episode of Walking Dead, right?
I don't... Yes, this is the penultimate, as you say.
See, I got it right.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because next week, Walking Dead goes up against the Ultimate Thrill Ride.
Me sitting on my couch eating pizza?
Oh, boy. Is it the one with the onions?
Yes, it is.
All right. Give me a time. No, I'm just kidding. So,
hey, WrestleMania 33 starts at 4 and runs until after midnight. Anytime you want to come down, Todd, feel free.
All right, when you see me kick in the door with my steak and cheese pizza,
all right,
that's when you know it's a good time. But, yeah, Walking Dead.
So this is them kind of maneuvering everyone. This is the first episode in a long time that everyone is in the episode. You know, everyone's been kind of doing their own little adventures in this. But the main crux of this is the Alexandria folks go to Oceanside.
Yes.
And they essentially are saying, like, hey, listen, Tara kind of goes in ahead of things and says, listen, we're coming to take your guns. You can either do this with us or again us.
Mm-hmm.
And they decide again us. And it kind of, like, ends up being, like, a little bit of a knockdown, drag-out thing. But, you know, our group, our Ricks and your Michonnes and your Carls and stuff really don't come off too terribly in this. I think they should have just went in there. I think they were too nice in this. They should have been much meaner.
They kind of were. I mean, but then again, Rick, you know, their experience. So it was kind of like, we set up the plan. We can do this that way. If it goes bad, they were ready to start, you know, busting skulls.
Right.
So, you know, it was luckily that the group, the Oceanside gave up, because I was kind of like, I'm not a big fan of Tara sometimes. I don't know. She's one of them that in it, I don't think she did last as long as she does. Like when she's like, you know, I don't know, giving the little kids the finger and stuff like that as they're leaving Oceanside. I don't know. But that whole storyline, I was like, okay with it, because they just need to steal guns from somewhere. The storyline that I was actually more interested in was the Sasha Negan Eugene side of it.
Yes, that was your B story, I guess.
Right.
Sasha got caught after the events of last episode, but we never see, like, what the whole thing is. It's just kind of like she's caught, you know?
Mm-hmm.
One of Negan's goons comes in and he tries to assault her. Negan does not sit still for this sort of thing. And this is another situation where Negan is kind of like, hey, listen, I'm going to give you this knife. I'm not taking this guy's body out of here. You know, you need to make a decision of not only what you're going to do with this guy, but also what you're going to do with us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I could use someone like you. You could either be with us or against us.
There's a theme.
And from there, you know, she tries to kind of play to Eugene's sensibilities. And that was immediately a plan that I knew was not going to work.
I knew exactly what he was going to bring her.
Right. Which was a great callback. She kind of says, like, she can't deal with it. She wants Eugene to bring her something sharp so that she can use it to kill herself. Because she can't deal with, you know, this sort of life anymore. And then, if you remember from a couple episodes ago, where the girls tricked Eugene into making pills that they were going to use to attempt to kill Negan, that is what Eugene brings to Sasha. And then it's at that point that she realizes, you know, if only she had been watching the episode, she would have known that that's what Eugene had.
He's too busy playing Galaga.
Yar's Revenge,
that's
how
what...
dare you, Galaga. but yeah, so it's okay, then the very last bit of the show, you know, our crew comes back to Alexandria. Where's Sasha? Hang on, there's more information. And they have Dwight in a cell. Dwight has left Negan's crew, and he has come to Alexandria to say that he is here to help.
Oh.
You know my feelings on Dwight.
It's Dwight's turn. It's his time to shine, Joe. Uh-huh. There's also a C story, or a D story.
Okay.
Maggie and...
the mayor or whatever it is of that town.
Yeah, he's gonna get rid of her, and then realizes that he can't do it because he can't even kill a zombie.
Right, so that guy stinks. I hate that guy.
I love that guy because he's so just skeezy. I love it.
He's terrible.
There wasn't enough Simon. That's what we needed. More Simon.
Oh, listen. I clicked on the little thing on IMDb, and he is in the screen cap for next week's episode, so...
That's all we need. Hopefully he makes it, because I need 7 more seasons of Simon.
If they want to do a Simon spinoff, I heard there was some issues with something going on with people leaving Fear the Walking Dead. Now, I've never seen Fear the Walking Dead. You know, I only have so much time in my day to watch things. But if they change Fear the Walking Dead to... Fear the Walking Dead, Simon Turned Loose. I'm watching that show.
Oh my god. Walking Dead, Simon Says.
Fear the Walking Dead, Simon and Simon. They turn into a Simon and Simon reboot.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
So, okay. So, I trust Dwight has good intentions. But I don't like Dwight. They have done a very poor job this season... at least to me, of building sympathy for us to care about Dwight.
What? Yes. I think my love for Dwight is unparalleled at this point. He's just such a good character. I can't get enough.
He's a good sympathetic character that you want to see succeed and win.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, not me.
No.
No, he can. I would have just let Daryl kill him.
Daryl's so angry.
I think he's got something. He's got a screw loose.
He's still mad that he killed Glenn.
Yeah.
No, you didn't, Daryl. Yeah, you did. That's all I'm gonna say. Every time someone tells Daryl that you didn't kill Glenn, I just go, yes, you did.
Like, he didn't put the barbed wire around the bat and swing the bat, but you know, he more or less did.
That's right. He didn't. he wasn't actually cut the head off, but he, you know, pulled the rope that dropped the blade.
Oh my goodness. So yeah, again, I'm not convinced. Like, I'm sure there's gonna be a big scene next week where Dwight has the showdown with Negan, and Negan's gonna try to pull his Negan mind trick on him, and Dwight is gonna hesitate, right?
Nope.
No?
None of this is happening.
Okay, so what do you think is going to happen next week?
That Dwight is going to go back and wait for his moment in the Saviors to drop the hammer or whatever. He's going to be there in inside man. There's going to be none of that. He's going to go back and be as loyal as you please.
Oh, so you think Jedi. This is all a work?
Yep, he's come to them to go, I hate Negan for everything he's done. He, you know, he took my wife, burnt my face, all of this. I'm ready to betray him. Let's go. And they're going to send him back. And that's going to be, you know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
That's the storyline.
No, I think this is them trying to turn him babyface against my better judgment. I don't think there's going to be any sort of double cross. I think there's going to be a thing where, like, Negan is going to be like, oh, man, I'm not going to try to do a Negan impersonation, but he's like, oh, man, taking it upon yourself and being a double agent, good on you, man. And then Dwight's going to be like, that's not what I'm doing. Somebody had to finally stand up to you, and he's like all quivered and stuff because he's afraid of Negan. And then Negan's going to say a bunch of swears at him. He's going to do this, and I can't take credit for this because somebody else on Twitter said, imagine how different the show would be if instead of Jeffrey Dean Morgan, is that who plays him?
Right.
That instead of him playing Negan, it was Dice Clay.
Oh my goodness.
He's got the leather jacket, he's got the whole thing, he's got the swearing.
Hickory Dickory Doc Lucille.
You're going to say he does the thing with the cigarette behind the head.
Oh, that would be the best. That would be the best.
Oh, my goodness. Okay.
Oh,
right.
Lucille.
It's too late. We have to stop. All right.
I know. I'm getting tired.
Yes. All right. So, sorry it was kind of a truncated TV talk there, but, you know, it's been a long day for the two of us. Thanks for listening, episode 339 of Longbox Heroes. For Todd, this is Joe saying, see you next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.